Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by one of my favorite people in all of the lacrosse world, Denver University coach Bill Tierney, whose Pioneers are 7-2, coming off of a really impressive win over Georgetown to open up the Big East schedule. Coach, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks, Terry. Glad to be on.
So, you know, I think that the way that this college lacrosse season has unfolded has left, you know, a lot of college coaches, a lot of college lacrosse fans, in some instances, scratching their heads at a little bit of results in terms of, you know, was that a game that should have gone that way? Was it a game that shouldn't have gone the other way? And when you look at the Denver team, you know, I think that fans can overreact in a positive way because you've got some wins under your belt over top five opponents, and detractors can go the opposite direction and particularly point at that Ohio State result. So just to open things up generally, what kind of team do you think you are or do you think you have right now?
Yeah, it's interesting, Terry. We, I think, first of all, dealing on a general terms, everybody by the end of the year is going to be able to look back on at least one game and say, wow, what were we thinking on that day? You know, what happened that day? Was that, you know, how great was that other team on that day and why and all that? And it, I think it just speaks volumes to the level and intensity and great coaching in our sport and just the fact that on everybody's got some good players now. So if you're not playing your best or there's something out there that's affecting your team or you've got some key injuries or the wind just doesn't blow right, everybody's going to have a win. And I think that goes all the way down to team number 68 and 69. It's so weird. You watch kids now and you'll see teams that, you know, it's very important to them. And, you know, maybe they're ranked above another team, but it just seems like the underdog always has a chance now. So with that in mind, I think it's going to continue to be an exciting season, continue to be some baffling wins and losses out there, but I think that's kind of what makes it interesting. You know, from a Denver standpoint, we're certainly excited about the fact that we've played two great teams early in Duke and Notre Dame and came out with victories. Played another great team early and lost to Carolina. And we always talk about not making excuses. So we'll talk about. You know, some of our internal reasons for the two tough games that we had. But we certainly feel good about last Saturday playing a great Georgetown team and coming out of our kind of malaise that we had over spring break after final exams and after, you know, traveling, for the first time since I've been here at Denver, traveling in a bus from Columbus, Ohio to Bethlehem, PA, and cold weather and all that stuff that everybody has faced, and therefore at the time it was frustrating, but certainly looking at the way Lehigh and the way Penn State played us, we just feel like we're very fortunate to have won those games and gotten through this. We finally come home last Saturday to a 75 degree day, record-breaking crowd at Peter Barton Stadium, our guys feeling good, and Trevor Baptiste winning 25 straight faceoffs doesn't hurt, and coming off with a great victory over a very good Georgetown team.
Trevor Baptiste, and this is kind of remarkable to me because, you know, I was one of those folks driving the bandwagon in the preseason about how, in my opinion, historically good your offense had a capacity to be this season. But there's no question, when you look at Denver's season so far and the way it's unfolded, Trevor Baptiste is probably the storyline. He, as a freshman came in and, in my opinion, or unseated a faceoff specialist who, in my opinion, was maybe the most underrated returning faceoff specialist in the country in Chris Hampton, and he's been dominant. And I want to get your thoughts on what about Trevor Baptiste has been, what about him allows him to be so successful? Because from my point of view, you know, I think that it's a combination of that tough athleticism. You know, he's a strong, stocky player, and also maybe, that strong toughness as it relates to the mental fortitude of being able to stay focused and lead your squad. And I've talked to a few people around your program that have indicated as much to me. How has his success unfolded from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think first you hit some important points right there. But going back even a step further, when we, you know, finally were able to get Trevor to come visit Denver and meeting his family, this is a young man who is well healed in goodness. I mean, I don't know if there's any other way to say it. He is a kind, great student, gentleman with a great smile that just everybody around him just thinks the world of him. So when you go from that kind of personality to a, you know, kind of a face-off knee position, you, sometimes those guys don't do well. And I think that's the thing that's really helped him. He's able to, for instance, when we do film, he does all his own film work with John Orson, our face-off coach. And, you know, and so they work hard on their own. But when everybody else is doing film, he's out on that field working on his craft. And that's exactly what he is. As you mentioned, he's strong, he's quick, he's dedicated, but he's never satisfied, You know, he had some, you know, he's had some rough spots, and he'll continue to have some rough spots. He's had some guys do try to do different things to him, and he'll continue to have that as well as we move forward. But he's learning, and as days go by, he's just got a little bit of this confidence that you want in a player that kind of says, it's not that I'm not listening to you, coach, but I think I can get it done. You know, one of those guys. And he's learning. He's starting to rely on his wing play and his teammates more. And he's just a dynamic kid.
Well, I do want to come back to the wings, but we'll do so a little bit when we kind of transition to the defensive end of the field. But you know, sticking with this idea of how good Denver had the potential to be and is starting to realize, in my opinion, offensively coming into this season, you know, the thing that stood out to me the most was the amount of depth that was going to be at your, you know, assistant Matt Brown's fingertips. And I kind of manifested, I viewed it as, you know, with so many new pieces, there was obviously going to be an adjustment period. You know, Connor Canizzaro transferring in from Maryland, and then, you know, a handful, maybe a little bit more than a handful of freshmen coming in that I thought had the talent to contribute right away. But at the same time, so you get out to a, you know, a fast start in your you know, first couple of games, scoring 15 plus goals, and then there was a string of 10 and 11 goal results, and then now here against a Georgetown team that, you know, I wouldn't say that they have been world beaters defensively, and they're not ranked in the top 10 or top 30 scoring wise, but, you know, I saw them create some problems for Loyola in a midweek game 2 weeks ago to put up 19 on them. How have you kind of seen the personnel come together, you know, and maybe starting particularly with the way that Connor Canizzaro has fit into that role, orchestrating the defense, particularly in Jack Bobstein's absence due to injury?
Well, you hit all the important pieces on the head. You know, first of all, we got to go back and remember what we lost. We lost a young man who, you know, over the years, I've been blessed with some teams that have had coaches on the field going way back to early 90s with Kevin Lowe, and then mid 90s with John Hess, and then the early 2000s with Ryan Boyle. But this guy, Jeremy Noble, you know, the Canadians won the world championship with a guy who'd never played attack for us, playing attack, because he's a coach on the field. And losing a guy like Jeremy, who probably, I don't know how many goals he had last year, maybe 9 or 10 or 11, but a lot of assists. But Jeremy was a guy who could pull it all together, translating Coach Brown's offense on the field, getting emotionally into the heads of his teammates, balancing egos. And you know, every great team has egos you know, who's doing well, who's not doing well, who needs the ball, who doesn't need the ball, all these things that Jeremy did, that's gone. And so replacing that, we knew, was a monumental task. So it's what you lost, and then it's what you add. And sometimes what you add, you know, is just as hard of work. You know, if you put too much sugar in a cake recipe, it's not going to taste well, you know? And so, even though, you know, the sugar itself tastes well. And then that's how we think of certainly adding Connor Canizzaro. Connor Canizzaro has been phenomenal for our team. First of all, our guys love him, which is most important. He is you know, our high scorer now, but certainly for him and for our guys, some people say, oh, you know, the offense is different. It's not different. It's just you know, an important cog in the wheel is getting used to it. And it takes time. It really does, especially when you have an intricate offense like Matt Brown's. If we said to Connor, go up top and dodge every time you get the ball, or go behind the goal and dodge every time you get the ball, the other five guys would figure out that, well, if I move a little bit, he'll find me, which he would. But in Brownie's system, as you know, that's not how it works. All six guys touch it, and all six guys are moving. And so Connor has been a phenomenal addition, but it's taken everybody, himself and the other five guys on the field with him, a little time to get used to that subtle change in play. And then, you know, the other side of this is when we talk about depth and we talk about number of guys we've got and all that stuff, and the great freshman class that we have, and, you know, not many of them have really broken in yet. They're getting better and better. We're playing more and more. We played 26 people in the first quarter the other day. So we're getting there, but still there's only six on the field at a time. And other people and other coaches, you know, they're good at defense and they're good at knowing who we are and they're good at, you know, our system, knowing our system. So we have to continually adjust, continually watch film and figure out what we think we can do to tweak what we look like each week. And those tweaks take some time. And, you know, we just, we got through, as I mentioned earlier, we got through some tough spots, you know, a week or so ago. And, we feel really good about the fact that, that we did, and we survived two games that we could have easily lost to Lehigh and Penn State, but found a way to win. And then, you know, to beat a really good team the way we did the other day, just makes you feel a little better. Do we think that we can go back to the old, to not playing well? Of course we can. You know, we're not there yet. The thing can still slip back, but we think that we took a great first step on Saturday.
Who has picked up the emotional mantle that you mentioned Jeremy was so good at navigating as it related to just kind of leading this team? Has there been a guy that you have seen emerge as the player that your team turns to in huddles or in practice or in moments when focusing emotionally becomes the primary goal?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think certainly on the field on game day, it's Bergy. It's Wesley Burke. When he speaks, they listen. You know, and it's kind of a group mentality when it comes to the leadership side of this thing. Nobody is, you know, the guy that can be so impactful on field, off the field, on Saturday night, on Tuesday afternoon practice, whatever it is, as Jeremy was. So we're thrilled with the way Bergy's doing things, and more importantly, thrilled with the way he's playing. You talk about a guy who's, you know, a Powhatan candidate who scores a lot of goals for us. You know, accepting a role of, you know, as I tell him all the time, he's still our most valuable offensive player because of the number of hockey assists he gets, because everybody's paying attention to him. And he's happy about that. That's the most genuine, fun thing about it. You know, Wesley's really a true team guy who really, truly, truly is happy when we win and when someone else scores a goal. So he is that guy. You know, but we've got a great senior class, eight players who all have had impact in our program. But none of them are that rah-rah Jeremy Noble guy. You know, Wesley does it on the field. You know, off the field, it's kind of by committee. And we've been working hard on their mental game and continue to do so. And we're seeing great signs of that.
Moving down the field, this is a year that I think a lot of teams were going to make adjustments in their rope unit because of graduation. But when you look at Garrett Holst and Mike Reese, you return a short stick and a long stick defensive midfielder who are very experienced.
I think you agree that, you know, kind of
issue that a lot of teams were focusing on at the top of the polls, at least, doesn't really apply to you. How do you characterize their performance to this point in 2015?
Well, those two, and especially, as you said, Mike has been playing as our first pole since he's a freshman, so he gets it, he knows it. He's still a little bit of a, if we've got a guy who can kind of, you know, play outside the system a little bit, it's Mike. You know, he can get transition for us, he can take the ball away, but he's been stalwart for us. Garrett's been starting for 3 years, you know, as a short stick and does a phenomenal job. He really understands the defense, covers for a lot of people, clears the ball for us. The good, going back to what we talked about before in Trevor Baptiste, is he's freed up Chris Hampton. So now we've got two other short sticks instead of just one other short stick, Christian Thomas and Chris Hampton, who kind of share that second short stick role. And that's given us depth. And then, you know, Jake Nolan, who's a sophomore, has alternated the pole runs with Mike Reese for 2 years now, and he's doing a phenomenal job. We've made Sean Mayle, who was a big-time midfield recruit, come in, and he's now a pole. So he's given us depth there. Matt Jones, who's a freshman defenseman, gives us a little depth at the close. So it's not brand new for us, like you said, but it's also having those two out front has allowed us to pair them up with some guys who needed a little bit more experience and make them look pretty good out there. Still a work in progress, but we feel great about those two seniors being out there each day.
And then just kind of continuing on down the field, in Carson Cannon and Christian Bergdorf, you had two close defensemen who were among the more proven. You know, I'm not wild about the term shutdown because I feel like it suggests that if a player puts up a couple of goals or a couple of assists, then you didn't shut them down. That doesn't necessarily correlate to positive performances. But that being said, you know, my expectation for Denver and what you guys were going to be able to do defensively was that it was going to emanate from opposing attacks' top two players having to work a little bit harder than they would against another matchup. Have you seen it unfold that way? You know, particularly maybe looking at that Carolina game, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. I think first of all, Christian Bergdorf is one of the finest defensemen in the game. You know, he's one of the finest I've ever had. This guy can do everything, and he's been doing everything. If you do go back to stats, and I'm like you, I don't rely on stats to determine whether a guy played well or not. But if you ever do go back in stats and look at his matchups, I think you'd see that he's done a phenomenal job out there. Now, the flip side of this is that he also knows that he plays within a team style, so sometimes he's not covering that top guy and somebody else is, you know, and that's just the way it is. But, you know, Carson went from his freshman year being our best cover guy and his freshman and sophomore year to last year having this Christian come in as a freshman and kind of taken over that role, but Carson still shuts down a lot of people, and you know, he's had a phenomenal career as well. So we do feel really good back there. Pat Carroll has come in and taken Teddy McKenzie's third starting spot there, and he's done a great job. So you know, we feel that a close defense we're solid, and you know, and then it is difficult for other teams' attacks to get on big runs. Although, you know, some other teams have had some good scoring go on from their attackmen. So it's something that it's kind of, in one way we look at it as, oh, these guys are getting overlooked because people say, oh, it's the system that does well. On the other hand, what we also know is you can't just say, you know, Christian or Carson shut a guy down if the guy doesn't have any points or any goals, because he might not even been covering half the day. So it's a yin and yang, and they know that when they play for us, but you know, I wouldn't trade either one of them for anybody out there.
And then just kind of last on the personnel, Ryan LaPlante is another one of those guys who is more experienced than most lacrosse fans probably notice because of the fact that he's played for three seasons, but for two and a half of those has been, well, two of them has been splitting time with, you know, and kind of serving as a little bit of a specialist role. How have you seen him emerge as he's taken on kind of a full-time starters type of role?
Well, it's been good, and you know, we go back to, you know, Jamie Faust graduating, and then you know, when we played the Denver Outlaws in the fall, I made Ryan play the whole game, even though it was a fall scrimmage, because he had to get a feel for that. And you know, Ryan's had some phenomenal games, he's had some phenomenal halves, he's had some phenomenal minutes, and he's had some a couple of games there, the Ohio State game and the even the Notre Dame game. You know, we win. You know, we only give up 12 shots on goal, and we win 11-10, and Ryan only has two saves. And now, when you play against a team like Notre Dame, and they, because they are patient, they're like us, they take good shots, and they are BBs, you know, you don't blame anything on Ryan. He just he just wasn't on top of his game in that one or the next one against Ohio State. But to his credit, he's worked very hard with Trevor, and you know, he's got his mental side, you know, is in order, and you know, we're glad we got him. He's, you know, being back to a situation like the other day where our offense scores 13 straight goals. You might not look at a goalie, but Ryan made some phenomenal saves in the few possessions that Georgetown had.
So just kind of opening the conversation back up a little bit, you know, one of the things that folks have talked about as it relates to Denver, particularly your schedule and your ability to position both for an at-large bid or seeding in an NCAA tournament, was just the imbalance between the out-of-conference schedule that you were able to build and the Big East as it has kind of taken shape, as well as a lot of the programs that either were trying to return to their former stature or improve their quality overall. Basically, Denver has a first half and a second half type of season in a way that, you know, a lot of your peers in the top 10 do as well. So, you know, as you look at what's in store for the Pios for the remainder of the regular season heading into May, what are some of the goals that you focus on, you know, particularly, I guess, kind of looking ahead to Villanova, who comes to town on Friday night?
Yeah, well, you know, we refer to our season as, you know, being a series of four different seasons. One is the out-of-conference season, and we think we certainly feel like the out-of-conference season that we put together in light of, you know, who will, like Notre Dame and Ohio State, you know, be willing to play a home-and-home series with us and who won't. I think we put together, you know, a very good out-of-conference schedule, and that's in the past, and that's in the bank. And what we try to do there is play the best teams we can, you know, knowing how the NCAA tournament works. Play the best teams we can, and come out of it with a couple or a few very good wins. Then we start like we did last Saturday in the Big East regular season. We know darn well that's if things don't go well in our out of season schedule, that's the beginning of our next opportunity as a ticket to the NCAA tournament. And the better you do in the regular season puts you in better shape when it comes to playing two games in 3 days at the third season, which is the Big East tournament. With those in mind, all you're trying to do is find a way that even if you've had a good out-of-conference season like we have, you know, with a disappointment here and there, and that's fine. And I'm sure if you talk to Notre Dame, they would say that, you know, their loss to us was their disappointment so far. That as you look back, you now move into the next part and say, look, even if it didn't go well, here's another chance. And hence why you have, you know, Hopkins in the Big Ten, and, you know, it's all these teams going to different leagues, because we're playing games in February and March that you're just not going to be at your best, you know. And so having this league schedule, the league tournament, to get the opportunity for an AQ, especially in light of how few spots there are after the AQs are doled out, you know, you just try to progress game by game and know the effect it's going to have on, in quotes, your next season, which is upon us.
Coach Tierney, I really appreciate your time. It's been a pleasure just getting this kind of refresher for the Pios. But, you know, just one more before we let you go. You're a guy that obviously has his finger on the pulse of the entire college lacrosse landscape. And certainly, you know, whether it's the personnel to the team performances, to the rules, to the other types of issues surrounding the game. Has there been anything in the first half of the season that's caught your attention, whether it be, you know, the controversy or the discussion surrounding February games, or anything else that you feel like, is kind of primary to comment on?
Well, I think first and foremost is the one that's not being commented on, and that's the face-off. I think it's been the best change that the game has seen in 50 years. You know, it's just been phenomenal. These guys have gotten to a point now where the refs are allowed to adjust sticks before they have to adjudicate a penalty. The cheaters that grab and hold and do all that other stuff are almost out of the game. Two refs on every face-off, just watching everything. It's just made it cleaner, and you're seeing face-off guys battle now instead of, you know, having refs try to figure out, you know, who grabbed the ball first. And so I think that's been phenomenal. I think, a new thing that was got to be addressed in next summer or the summer after that with the continued conversation about shot clocks is that, you know, the timer on or the new shot clock, the visible shot clock has been a help, certainly for the fans and all the televised games, seeing how much time is left and having it being attached to the game clock. That's been a help. But the kind of new emergence for that is still there's a problem in the adjudication of that because teams are now missing the goal on purpose. And a shot that kind of heads toward the goal takes the referee's mindset off of, am I going to give these guys a stall warning, and being able to say, well, they took a shot. Well, what they're not going to know, and they'll never know, because how could you know it, is that teams are now being coached to miss the goal. And that's kind of the next, in my mind, the next sad moment about our game. I think as good as this has been, it's time to move on and just get all that stuff out of the way, get the shot clock in and move forward. But overall, it's been so far an exciting season. You're seeing scoring come back in the game for a lot of parts of it. You know, I think it's going to be continued to be a great, great season, and you know, we hope to be a part of it toward the end.
Just one real quick: where do you fall on the idea of moving championship weekend off of Memorial Day? Is that something that you would favor?
Well, you know, there's two things that come in mind. As you know, at Denver, we're a great hockey school, and you know, I watch these hockey players play every Friday night and Saturday night and play a game that is 10 times more physical than our game, and play it with basically 20 guys. You know, they have about 22, 23 that they suit up. And so if they can do that for 20 straight weeks, Friday night and Saturday night, and bang into the boards, and by the way, they practice even on Friday morning and Saturday morning too, which I'm baffled by, then why can't we get people to agree to have Friday, Sunday, you know, events, rotate them each year? You know, maybe if each team did two of those and had a home and home one each year, that would be, you know, that would mean that one away weekend, you're going to go play Friday, Sunday. We would do it, and we travel further than anybody. That's for sure. And that might help us as we move the thing, you know, out of February 5th or 6th. But the truth of the matter is, look at this weather you guys have had out east in late March. It's still horrible, you know. So I'd love to see it move back 2 weeks into the second week of June. That would give Memorial Day weekend an opportunity to have some first-round pods where you might bring in, you know, four or six teams and have that all happen so you could have a big event, still spread it around. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I think there are some efforts being made by the NCAA to bring the cost back to reality and continue to make the Final Four weekend or championship weekend on Memorial Day a great one. You know, one of the things that hurt crowds, to be honest, is all the TV that the games are on. You're seeing less and less crowds at places because it's so easy to watch TV games, especially if the weather isn't very good.
11 games on TV this weekend. It was remarkable. I was on my couch from 11 a.m. until 7 p.m. yesterday. It was, it was the first nice day, and I spent it the entire time indoors because I was actually enjoying watching the lacrosse. But Coach,
it's amazing. Amazing. And the guys who are broadcasting the games are doing a great job. The cameras are phenomenal. Even all the streamed games, a lot of them are being done very well. So, we might kill ourselves as far as home crowds go, but you know, here in Denver, we're excited about the fact that we continue to get great crowds. They get growing every week, and we're on basically on a video thing every weekend. So you know, as long as it continues to grow and more people get accustomed to it, more people get in touch with the game, then it's all good.
Bill Tierney, head coach of the Denver Pioneers, we thank you for your time. We look forward to catching you again on down the road.
Okay, Terry, thanks. Have a great one.
All right, you too. Inside the Cross Podcast.